with David Cassidy, his music, and music that he has enjoyed, music that he grew up to, and just generally talking with him this afternoon for the next hour on The Electric Lunch. Song of 1970 for the Partridge Family featuring David Cassidy. Welcome to Calgary, David.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here. Summertime, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about time. Yeah.
Ain't it though?
Yeah.
Ain't it though?
When I put that record on, do you cringe when you hear that music
did
now?
Did you see me slump down in my chair? Yeah, I do. I do cringe. It's been a long time. And that was the first record I ever sang on. Mm-hmm. The very first time. I'd never been in a recording studio.
How old were you?
I was 20.
Uh-huh.
And I walked into the studio and went, well, okay. And they propped me up to a mic and they said, just sing here. And I went, okay. And I was in there with the rest of the studio guys, which was, they had really good players on that.
Yeah.
Larry Carlton.
Hal Blaine.
Yeah. Right. Max Bennett. Melvoin. Mike Melvoin. Michael Amardian. Those kinds. I mean, great, great players. Anyway, that record became the number one record in 1970. And they have a NARM convention, which is the National Association of Record Merchandisers.
Uh-huh.
And it was nominated along with Let It Be, which was the last Beatles single.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Well, McCartney shows up at the NARM convention. Now, in 1963, I was 13.
Yeah.
And everybody, those guys wrote the soundtrack to my youth. I loved them.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, here I was making records suddenly out of the blue. And he shows up and my record's nominated and I won it. My record won it, and I felt so guilty and, like, so undeserving of it. I was speechless when they handed it to me. I wanted to say, Paul, I'm really sorry. I feel like such a fool.
I wonder how he took it.
Oh, he didn't care. By that time, he had $850 million and
yeah.
$850 million number one song, so it didn't really matter, I'm sure, to him. But it was a moment in my life. But, yeah, I do cringe when I hear some of the old ones. What they used to do is they'd take the track and slow the track down.
Yeah.
Let me sing on it. This is on the first Partridge Family album, and the second one, too. And then they'd speed the record back up to regular speed, so I sounded younger.
Good grief.
They always thought I sounded too old, and in truth, I guess I was. I don't know.
Did you not at one time, we're speaking of the Beatles, have a fan club larger than theirs?
Yeah, that's very true. And I also cringe when I think of that, too. Yeah, I did. A wonderful compliment, but, you know, those days were they were crazy. They were hectic. It was a mad kind of a lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
And, people, when you hear that, when I think about that, it was something that people envy, that kind of adulation.
Life in the fast lane. So.
Well, yeah. Life in the fast lane, like working 18 hours a day and, you know, traveling around, going from Brinks trucks to blankets through kitchens and decks of Toyotas and destroying limousines. And it's not a hell of a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah.
It really isn't.
I can imagine.
So,
well, I wish... No, I can't imagine, but I can
you
sort of picture...
Could? You know what? I wish I you could,
sort of
too. I can remember so many times standing at the focal point of, like, doing these outdoor concerts and stuff, 50, 60,000 people,
uh-huh.
and going, I just wish every man in the world could stand here for just 2 seconds to feel what this sensation is all about. And what you do is you look around and it's complete madness, hysteria, and you go, you look up at this guy and go, why me?
Yeah.
You know, what did I do? it's a fascinating experience, and it was a good one. I look back on it. I'm glad I ended it as opposed to it leaving me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It does happen so often.
It does indeed, and I certainly didn't want to become a casualty from that. And here I am, alive and healthy, and
having
well,
a good time
here in beautiful Calgary.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to take a break right now,
okay.
And we've been touching on the Beatles a little bit the past few minutes. We're going to get right into that in just a sec.
Speed West Auto, your performance store.
This is the Electric Lunch with my special guest, David Cassidy, today. We were talking briefly about the Beatles for a bit there.
Yeah.
Let's delve right into them. Your
Shall
memories
we?
Of the Beatles from when you were said you were 13 years old.
Correct. When I was 13, they broke in the United States, and I guess here in all of the world. And every girl I went to school with, and I have to tell you that I understood, and I talked with both Paul and with John. As a matter of fact, right before they went on their Wings Over America tour, they did a Wings Over Europe tour, and I was in England when they were rehearsing for that tour, and I spoke with them, and they invited me to come down and hear their concert, and they were rehearsing, they were doing a run-through, and I came down, and they did the whole show for me alone. I was sitting there in this huge sound stage, you know?
I could have handled that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to tell you, I was in heaven. And they said they really needed some feedback, you know, that it was just having somebody there to do it for. Because they'd just been working on it, and there was a lot of technical stuff and effects and things, you know,
uh-huh.
blowing up pianos and things like that, you know, subtle stuff.
Subtle,
and yeah. And I got up and jammed and played with them a little bit, and we talked some of that. His sister came and saw a number of my concerts, Paul's sister,
mm-hmm.
and he that's originally how I met him, is he called me about his half-sister coming, and I got her in, I got tickets, and, you know, did
yeah.
the whole thing. And anyway, we got up and played a little bit, and on tour, I used to carry what was a cassette player, because they didn't have Walkmans in those days.
Right.
And I used to have a collection of all their early stuff, and this next record. On tour, on the last world tour, and here we are, back in the USSR.
In the USSR. in the USSR.
Get out of singing and working on stage and movies and television, you can be a disc jockey.
Thank you. Can I take you up on that offer? How about, like, next week?
Okay. Well, I'm going on holidays next week. You can fill in for me.
Here I'll be.
Okay. we were talking about England, your popularity there. Well, your popularity all over the world. But England more so in that the crowds were a little more boisterous there.
Yes, they are. They are. And, it's a scary and an amazing phenomenon when that kind of situation occurs where you're doing a concert for 30, 40, 50,000 people and they're all crushing and pushing up in front. So the people up in front, when they start to fall, they go down, they get trampled.
Yeah.
And my last concert, not from that experience, but from a heart attack, a girl died. And I had already made the decision to retire, not to perpetuate that.
Yeah.
The rest of that career, whatever that was. I just had made that decision, but it was very painful, and I felt, even though I wasn't responsible for it, I just still felt somehow or another responsible that, you know, if she had a heart problem, which she had, a history of it, she shouldn't have come. You know? And she just got too emotionally carried away, and. Mm-hmm. Obviously, just got to her, and she did indeed die. But you don't see an awful lot of that any longer. I think that things have changed. Groups don't seem to have the kind of the identity,
the charisma,
that I suppose it it's changed a lot since then. And when I went on tour, I don't even think Elton experienced it. I can remember touring through Australia and New Zealand with him. He was coming from Australia to New Zealand. I was going from New Zealand to Australia, and then from there to Hong Kong and Japan and Hawaii and the States, and then to Europe,
uh-huh.
which was about an 8-month tour.
Ooh.
And he was coming the other way.
Uh-huh.
So we met up down there, and he was drawing a huge amount of people, but they weren't. They were there more to listen. The people that would come to mind were there more to participate. It came the experience.
I see.
Not just me,
yeah.
but the whole thing,
uh-huh.
where you'd have 50 guys in front on a fence and a railing that would do nothing but pull people out, and the St. John's Ambulance people. And, you know, I'd come into town, and I'd get such one of those headlines, like in the paper, saying, World War III arrives. You know? Hey, welcome to Sydney. Thank you. It's great to be here. You know? It makes you just... I don't know. What am I doing this for? However, during that tour of Australia and New Zealand, he came after he finished, and he came over, and we played together, and this was the song that we got up and played.
By Elton John.
By Elton John.
Go ahead, say it. Best disc jockey voice.
Saturday night's all right for fighting. Yeah.
I just ran to the library to grab a record. I'll go back and get it in a minute. But anyway,
yes.
And you, we were talking briefly about Elton John and his later works, and
he did Captain Fantastic at this big Wembley concert, and I think it was 76, something like, yeah, I think it was 76. And it was, who started? Joe Walsh, the Eagles, Beach Boys, and Elton.
All on one stage?
On one stage, at Wembley. 80,000 people.
Great.
Summer day, much like it is today here in beautiful downtown Calgary.
Overlooking the silent streets of Lower Mount Royal, yeah.
And it was one of those kind of magical, and the Beach Boys came on after the Eagles and Joe. And the Beach Boys did an hour of knock 'em, sock 'em, rock 'em. Everyone was a hit killer and got the place nuts. Well, Elton came on with his new band when he let Davey and Nigel and Dee go. And he came on with Kenny Passarelli, who was been playing bass, and a couple of Skunk Baxter and 14 guitar players.
Right.
And they did, side to side, he did a couple of hits, like maybe Philadelphia Freedom, one other. And he did Captain Fantastic. Side to Side, which was a double album, for about an hour and a half. Now, nobody in the audience had ever heard Captain Fantastic.
So they all sat on their
hands. And he came off, and I spoke with him about, I don't know, a month later, and he said, you know, I really made a mistake by doing that. But he got him afterwards, because he did that, and then he ended up doing a few more of his hits at the end.
Uh-huh.
But it was a wonderful, kind of a magical afternoon and evening.
I understand the Beach Boys. You mentioned this to me. The Beach Boys are coming back to Calgary.
They are. I think they're coming into town soon. I think next month. I saw it on television.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Last summer, as I was telling you, Bruce Johnson, who worked with me, who's been in the Beach Boys for a long time, since California Girls, he co-produced an album with me. And I had the hit in England and in Europe and outside of the United States. The first person to record, don't cringe, I write the songs, and it was a far different version, because he wrote it.
That's right, yeah.
And he came in, and we brought Carl Wilson and all of them. I wish we had the record to play for you, but unfortunately, you don't have any of my older albums.
Oh.
So, no problem. Bruce called me up last year. Probably in April, and I was in rehearsal for a musical that I was doing called Little Johnny Jones that I did through America last year for about 6 months, and said, Carl's leaving, and he's going out and doing a solo thing, and do you want to come and replace him and sing? And I thought, you would have to call me now. No, I can't, unfortunately, and I have to admit I did have second thoughts, but I was already in a month's worth of rehearsal, and I'd really made this commitment to do that. We're not going to play a Beach Boys record.
We're going to jump right along here.
Yes.
We'll get into the Beach Boys in about half an hour.
Okay.
But we were talking about the King of Rock and Roll.
Yes, we were.
How much of an influence did he have on you as a youth?
He was really very young when he broke, and very, very young when he started. But I was like the youngest kid on my block, and I remember when this next record came out, every kid from the ages of 9 to 13 to 14 that was on the block, you know, they were all singing it and humming it and going crazy, and all the girls were chewing gum in their bobby socks, and he was the king. And this record is it's a classic, and one I'm sure that you will all enjoy.
Well, it's my baby lamb. Be
That record was played for a very good reason, David, because on an old album by the Partridge Family called Sound Magazine, I'm watching him cringe. David, my favorite things, color depends on mood, drink 7-Up. Of course, that was when you were younger and innocent and all that.
I was a child.
Yes. And the song was The Thrill Is Gone by B.B. King.
That's right.
Can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong for that.
Yeah. All right, on to other things. After the Partridge Family TV show was over and went into syndication, you went solo and recorded an album, and your first song was an old association tune.
That's right. Terry Kirkham? I saw him not 2 or 3 years ago, and I had never met him, and he came up to me and gave me a big bear hug and said, "You made me rich, son." I said, "Well, thanks, Terry." Anyway, yes, it was indeed. It was also the title of my first album. And it was during when we were doing the show in 70, I think it was 72, this record came out, and it was the title track of the album, simply titled Cherish.
Calgary is with me today on the Electric Lunch, David Cassidy. And it's 25 minutes before 1 o'clock. We're going to talk right now, David, about the play you're in town at Stage West Theater with
Correct.
John Lawler called Tribute.
That's right.
Lay out the plot line for us. What's it about?
Well, John plays a man. Jack Lemmon did it originally on the stage in New York, on Broadway, and later in the film. The film didn't really capture it, I hear. I didn't see the film, and I didn't see the play originally when he did it. It's about a man who's dying of cancer. He's one of the all-time, kind of like the prince of players. He's the most, he's a child, really. He's 50 years old, and he's fun-loving, and he's a clown. He's a he's just one of the all-time charmers, you know. If my father had been alive, he could have played it very well. And he finds out that he's dying, and his son comes and visits him for the summer, who hasn't seen him for a couple of years, with me. I play the conflict in this play, and I am not a lot of fun.
It's not a lighthearted role, then?
Mine is not at all. The play is extremely funny. Bernard Slade, who wrote it, is a very successful Canadian playwright, as a matter of fact. He went to Hollywood and became a very, very successful, what he termed as like selling out, television and films and stuff. And he, strangely enough, when you see the play or when I tell people this, he originally wrote and created The Partridge Family and The Flying Nun.
Really?
And a number of other things, hung up his guns and said, I've had it. He made a tremendous amount of money, was very successful, and then became a very serious New York playwright.
Uh-huh.
And also wrote this particular play, which is it's a comedy. It makes you cry. It's a wonderful production. It's a wonderful play. I'm not a lot of fun in the play. I'm kind of an uptight fool. And I present the conflict in it for my father, who is John, and it's just for me a lot of the problems that most of us have had with our fathers, and it's something that we all can identify. I know I did, and people tell me this all the time that you know, you just kind of keep missing it, you don't quite hit it, and it's very touching, and it's very real. It's not a fabricated kind of relationship. I think Bernie wrote it about very close to home. It's
yeah.
very close to home for me, because
mm-hmm.
my parents were divorced when I was young, and I would go and visit my father in the summer times, and you know, trying to catch up for all that lost time, and trying
right.
to, you know, why didn't you ever tell me that you were going to leave? Why did you just? I woke up one morning and you were gone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a wonderful play, and we'll be doing it all through this month and through July.
Good.
And, the theater is terrific, and. Well, I'm having a great time doing it.
I must say this, the fest is
terrific.
Oh, unbelievable.
It's wonderful.
It's great.
You know, it's amazing in the United States what you would have to pay to see this kind of theater and to have that kind of an evening and a
yeah.
dinner. It's wonderful. And I hope you all come and see it. I hope you come and see it.
Oh, I shall.
You know?
You betcha. I mean, how can I refuse a personal invitation like that?
You've got it.
In front of all of Southern Alberta. Okay, let's get back to music here, David.
Yeah, let's.
Talk about the Everly Brothers, your recollections.
Okay, 1970.
Yeah.
They were one of the most influential groups in my life. I loved them. I loved all their early records and... they were doing a summer show called The Everly Brothers Replacing Johnny Cash for Screen Gems, which was Columbia Pictures Television.
Okay.
We went on a press junket to Las Vegas, from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. I was, in 1970, going on this press junket with the Partridge Family. So, we flew up there, we got off the plane, and they put me in a limousine between Don and Phil. Now, these are guys, I can't tell you, I was so thrilled that I was actually going to get to sit in the car and ride and talk to the Everly Brothers, right?
Yeah, right.
So I get in, and I sit in the limousine on the hump between Don, who's looking out the right window, and Phil, who's looking on the left. Now, Don and Phil were not really fond of one another. It's why Don and Phil don't make records anymore.
That's right. Okay.
I got in the car and went, golly shucks. Gee, guys, it's really swell to be here. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So, You know, I'm making records too now. Nothing. I felt like such a bimbo. The vibe in this car was so heavy.
Oh, no.
And what ended up happening, I didn't see it, but apparently they got into fisticuffs on stage one night, and that was it.
Oh, my goodness.
However, they have gone on. Phil has gone on as a successful writer and singer, and Don, too. And, you know, it just, the whole illusion sort of broke down for me, but...
It was
really amazing. It was a sort of a rude awakening.
You never expect sibling rivalry out of the two. No.
No, you don't at all. And it was a real shock and a blow, and I can't tell you how uncomfortable I was all the way from there to Caesar's Palace. You know? So here they are, the Everly Brothers, doing Kathy's Claim.
And that's Kathy's Clown. 16 minutes to 1 o'clock with John Clark and David Cassidy. Well, we were talking about, you were just mentioning where you have appeared in Canada, for instance, CNE, the Forum in Montreal. Have you ever actually sang for people out in Western Canada?
No, as a matter of fact, I did a concert, I think, in Vancouver early on, but it was very early on. And other than playing, I've forgotten where I played there, which was probably 1971 or something, long, long time ago. Other than doing the CNE and playing the Forum in Montreal, I did very little work in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never done any acting here. I've never taken a play or anything.
No, here
I am, and I have to tell you that if the weather holds up like it is today, it's summer camp.
Yeah.
You know?
Tell me, it's
very beautiful.
Let's digress a few minutes. About just after you got here, you're mentioning how great the weather is today, and yet a week ago we had some snow, and that just destroyed you.
Well, I got off the plane, and it was one of those days, I guess you might remember it about 2 weeks ago. It was about 75 degrees.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. It was glorious. I got off the plane and went, oh, I'm in heaven. I died, went to heaven. This is great. The air was clean, not like in Los Angeles where you can, you know, cut pieces of smog and put it on a plate.
Yeah.
You know? I thought, this is day. Went up to 35. And my manager, who flew in with me, left, right, that night, and said, so, are you enjoying the weather? Raining, damp, you know? I said, it's 35 degrees. No, it's 35 degrees. I'm freezing. I'm angry. I'm
I'm lonely.
Ah, well, speaking of being lonely, girls.
Ah, wait a minute.
Yes, it's good to be young again.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Speaking of young again. Way, huh?
Yeah.
It is summer.
Yes.
The weather is wonderful.
Yes.
We're all having a good time here in Calgary, aren't we?
Aren't we? Yes, we are.
I love it.
Okay.
So to bring you back to those golden, olden days, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Cassidy. You probably had a dance contest done at one time.
On the record, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well,
and did you knock us off the air?
No, as a matter of fact, we had what is commonly known as a power failure here. Our chagrin.
Yes, that's a technical term in radio.
I promise I had nothing to do with that.
Sure.
Nor did you. Nor did you. Can't take credit for all the mishaps.
Oh, well.
So, this sure has been fun, hasn't it?
And we're rolling right along now, folks.
Yes, we certainly are.
This is the silliest electric lunch I've done in quite some time.
Well,
David.
It's pretty silly for me, too, I must tell you.
Tell me.
Yes.
Now, let's get back to something serious here.
Why?
You have a new album in the works.
Yes, I do.
Tell me about it.
Well, I can only tell you, I have not started recording yet. I was in Nashville right before I was here, 2 days before I was here. I went from New York to Kentucky to Nashville to L.A., packed my bags, took a couple of aspirin and got on a plane and came up here. And it's been in the works for almost a year now. And I haven't been in the studio for, oh God, must be 5 or 6 years. And in August, I'm going with Larry Butler, who's a terrific producer, and produces Crystal Gayle, and produced a lot of Kenny Rogers records until, I think, about a year ago. And he's been wanting to do it with me, and I've been wanting to do it with him, and at long last, I'm going back into the studio.
Great.
And I'm going back to make records and to make some music, and I really feel good about it, you know. It's something that I've been thinking about over the past 4 or 5 years, but I stopped recording because I didn't have anything I wanted to cut. I didn't feel like I had any direction.
Mm-hmm.
I had no lack of inspiration, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, as opposed to going in just as...
Yeah.
It should never be that. So the juices are flowing. I feel great about it. And we went over and I played him a couple of tunes that I had. And he has a network of writers that are just terrific. Witness cutting, 25 in a row, top 10 records.
Yeah,
for
sure.
And he's...
You don't do any writing yourself then?
I do, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But Larry's the kind of producer, he's really forceful, and he's... he really, if he doesn't think it's a hit, he's not going to cut it,
mm-hmm.
period. Whether you wrote it or your aunt wrote it or he doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, if it works within the framework of what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't go in to waste your time or anybody else's money. So we're going to go in the studio in August. It'll probably, I don't know, it'll probably be fall or Christmas release.
Okay.
But I'm really looking forward to it.
Something to look forward to for
you
people
betcha.
Who haven't heard you on vinyl for a long time.
That's true.
Not since that summer days where we did a limbo on top of the record. Anyway.
The limbo rock, yeah.
Yes. Moving right along, we're going to play some Roy Orbison because you were mentioning he is a fan of yours too. Or you are a fan of his. Maybe he is a fan of yours.
As a matter of fact, he...